the footprint that is caused by having the detention centres is massive. It's actually massive on our emotional toll, psychological toll, the financial toll. And really, if you think of trying to be conservative, then what you would really want to be doing in terms of that space is actually aligning this asylum seeker chapter with the history of migration, and that will be like a kind of chiropractic move.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a nice shift to consider that our current nationalist ideology is radical. That is the radicalization, not people who are disturbed by it.
That's right. And I think that's a really great way to actually think about the whole thing, that we are living in a world that has been constantly radicalized and taking us further and further away from what we value and what we want to be and who we want to be and how we see ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And what are you doing towards all of these things? Because I've read some of the things that you've written, and what it does for me as somebody who is not going to write something is it gives me something that I can share.
Yep.
And say, I read this great thing, it did this and this and this to me, but here's the real thing. It's like telling someone about a film or a documentary or something.
Yeah.
But what about beyond words?
I think there's a few things. I think in terms of being an artist, we have to really operate cross-sectorally. There's no point insulating ourselves, and I think we have insulated ourselves from the rest of society. And I don't mean that we actually instrumentalize the arts. I don't think that's just doing somebody else's job for them. What I actually mean is we start talking about the arts as having an intrinsic value. You go and you go and talk to people and you say, you know why the art, you know what they say, you go to the milk bar and the guy says, so what do you do? You say, I'm an artist.
Yeah.
And he goes, what is that? And then our responsibility is to make our practice to be so relevant to his daily life that he actually goes away and thinks, yeah, I think the arts are quite important. And you have to do that in every way that you engage. The language is absolutely key. So the first thing I think we have to do is change our language so that it's not about risk mitigation. It's not about turning out what we do into a cultural product. Don't talk about cultural product. We make art. We make things that are provocative, that irritate, that enlighten, that disturb, and that actually, you know, amplify our human presence. That's what we do. And we need to be able to talk about those things at the football, in political dimensions, at any dinner party, with people of different political persuasions. So it takes a certain amount of courage, but it also takes a certain amount of educating ourselves to say, well, how do I actually talk about this?
And I imagine it takes a certain amount of retraining of ourselves and our own position with what we do, and a constantly self-reinvigorating amount of love to want to share this thing that you care about and put it in somebody else's hand and mind and brain for them to invariably get wrong or for you to invariably misrepresent and then try again. And I think there's also a super danger in that on the trajectory to commodification is definition. And to be a career-minded artist, you're constantly defining whatever it is that you do so that it can be easily handed to somebody else. Not that there so can be an exchange or an engagement or a dialogue, but so that it can be handed off. And then they can take it and distribute it and care about it and leverage it. But the more exciting part of being an artist is the consistent re-comprehension of what did you do? What did you think you were doing? What did you actually end up doing? How has that affected everybody in relation to what effect you were trying to have in relation to what effect it had on you to be the embodiment of that thing that you're trying to tackle and deal with and understand and unearth? And every unknowing, I fear, puts us further back when we're speaking with people who exist in worlds where you are always stepping towards the next point of knowing. And I wonder how that can be an equal conversation, or how you, or if you just need to end up being like an ultimate strategist and know when you're answering somebody with the logistics of your profession, and when you're answering somebody with accolades and validations of your profession, and when you're answering somebody with the unknowns and the vulnerabilities and the self-exposure and the calling.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
I mean, it is really, it's a lot of work. And I wonder if part of our job is to simplify it so that some of those things you just don't worry about. Because I think what you were describing, the sort of difference between the career-minded artist and what I would say the artist who has a working life, which is always provisional, I think they're two different headsets. And I don't think headspaces.
No, headsets great. Is great. Madonna headsets. Yeah. We've got to get the singing on. I like this. This is my Madonna headset for today.
And then who's the other artist? Who's the, what's the other headset called?
I think it must be someone like... I don't know, Daryl Braithwaite or something. How far can I go from Madonna?
That's a pretty long way. Yeah, I think that's a very, really interesting place for artists to work out. Are they building a career or are they building a working life? And I think if you're looking at building a career, I think that's. I mean, Salieri did it. He built a career.
Mm-hmm.
But Mozart had a working life as an artist. He had something else that was going on. I think what you end up with is being able to... I think artists have always been led a provisional life, and I think the rest of the workforce is catching up with us. Because so much work these days, so much labour is provisional because people aren't on wages, they're on contracts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, there is mm-hmm. so much... There's such an enormous distribution of activity that is now the workplace is virtual, and it's sometimes physical, and it's always mobile. Mm-hmm. And I think artists are able, because of our lives have always been provisional, that's actually puts us in the middle of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you can get inside that just because of the way that we've had to behave and everybody else is catching up around us, then what it means is that you can actually start to leverage those different spaces that you work in, but actually retain the whole idea of the arts being intrinsic simply because you inhabit change better than anybody else does. And I think that's a position of strength that we haven't had before. Mm. And I think that's as a result of, you know, technological evolution and the change in the, you know, in the global and the local marketplaces, you know. Mm. And in some ways you have to sort of accept that those things have an influence, but you don't make them, that's the thing that you ride through. What you ride on is all the things that connect us as being human beings and the way that arts mediates and creates those things. That's what you ride on.
Yeah, right. Yeah. In a lot of ways, though, aren't we just going back 100 years or 200 years to when nobody had a salary? And there was no such thing as a job description. There was just, we need another person. And then when that person comes in, all this shit we can't handle, you're now doing it. And I wonder if sometimes we christen change or progress, we christen retrograde. What's a better word? To go back.
Retrospectively?
Receding, maybe? Yeah. Somehow we christen a fallback as a progression.
Yeah.
And it's because we're not looking far enough back.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's definitely, and that goes along with what kind of history you're telling.
Yeah,
who's telling it?
Yeah, because I am aware that there are a huge population of camels in outback Australia. Mm-hmm. And then I never put together the fact that there would need to be, when those camels came over, people who were skilled with those camels so that they could be commodities to the Australian bush. And that, of course, meant many Afghani people. And so we have a huge Afghani influence and history in the nation of Australia 100 years ago. And it was quite an epiphany for me to consider that I'd been told there were camels and I just accepted that there were camels, not thought about all the other shit that obviously meant.
Yeah.
and the train from Darwin to Adelaide is called the GAN.
Yep. And go up the Eden Theta track.
Exactly.
You get up the Eden Theta track, and that's another story, and we don't tell it very often because we're telling this story at the moment. And I think the multiplicity of stories is the other way in which we can change. We actually need to not be telling the same story over and over again, which is what we've been indoctrinated to do, the Great Australian Story, whatever that is. What we actually need to be telling a whole other set of stories. And, you know, intervening, insinuating, infecting those stories in the kind of greater population. And I think that is much more possible now than it's ever been before, simply because of, you know, distribution mechanisms are so infinite these days.
Well, I wonder though about the double-edged sword of education,
mm-hmm.
because yes, the thing that you write can change a mind that you never interact with personally, but in learning how to read that format, they've also been indoctrinated and they need to get past the way they've learnt to think, which has been tied up in learning the skill of how to read this new thing. So I wonder how to deal with that as well.
I think it comes down to trust.
Okay.
That you actually trust people to doubt.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Trust in doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the artist lives.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely it. And that's actually where democracy operates best.
Okay.
Because it's always provisional.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing concrete. And we keep wanting to concretize everything and say, this is Australia, this is Australia, this is Australia. And the more you say it, it's bullshit.
There's a really good saying, something like, doubt is an uncomfortable position, but certainty is a ridiculous one.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, the only certainty is change.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. Okay, so I'm not going to write things that are probably going to change the world, but I'm hopefully going to make some GIFs or string a bunch of emojis together or make a short film clip or share a status update or something.
Mm-hmm.
Where does my power as self-identifying as a choreographer and composer, where does my power lie to leverage the privilege that I've been born into in this country, and then with the education I received, and then with speaking a language which is so global?
Yeah.
How can I leverage that to, first of all, ask the questions that are going to, secondly, get fire and continue to spur on the flames of reconsideration, reevaluation, re-self-positioning in relation to everything that you thought you were and you, without bringing upon people who are going to be subjected to what I'm trying to bring up, the fear that is almost always married with doubt. Like somehow you need to supply or facilitate doubt at the same time taking care of the fear, because I think maybe love and trust is what you're saying.
Also, I think creating really good habits. You know, if you embody doubt in your practice, then it will be there in the work.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's there in the work, then whoever receives it is going to be put in a position where they have to think and feel in a way that is representative of your expression.
Yeah.
That in itself is enough in the first instance. In the second instance, there is no reason why something that you make will not have a massive effect. And it comes down once again to history.
Yeah. Okay.
Who tells that story?
Yeah.
Who says that? What if somebody goes back and maps and tracks all of the things that go from a conversation that you have and tracks their way through to an event. For we don't have any say in that, and there's no, and the only reason why we start thinking about that is because, you know, I don't know, modernism, you know, the hero author
legacy.
Or whatever. Yeah, legacy, all that sort of stuff. But all you can deal with is the here and now and those, and yes, make those, you know, exchanges in your practice as good and as of the best quality as you can ever do, because you don't actually have control over those things. We just don't have control over them. And that is, you know, it's a bit poor because, you know, I mean, we, you know, yeah, it doesn't really serve our ego very well. However, it's kind of gives us an enormous amount of relief.
Yeah.
Because our responsibility is not about servicing our own ego. It's about just looking at that single point and thinking, I'm going to make this as good as I can possibly make it with all the skill I've got, and to actually construct that as a habit in your practice over and over again. And if you do that, they are the artists that you look for over and over again who have done that, who have basically ignored people saying, oh, you know, you were good once, but you're not anymore, or you'll never be any good, or you'll never do anything. And if you have that singularity of purpose and you haven't, two or three people that can actually, you can come along and they can say, I think there's something there. I think there's something there. Mm-hmm. That's the groove that you need to work on more and more, you know, I think for all of us.
I just wonder about the, because yes, I think it is a relief, but I also wonder about the other side of relenting is the irresponsibility of oblivion, the irresponsibility of accepting being oblivious to your effect or impact, or, you know, like how to deal with both sides of that, how to take care of the fact that you're not doing it for the repercussions, but also know that if you're asking people to reconsider the world in the hopes that the radical shit that's going on does not last forever, you are asking for an impact and an effect.
I think it's okay to ask for an impact. I think that's good because I think, you know, that makes you active.
Yes.
You know, that part. And I think, you know, relenting is a great word. I don't think we should ever relent.
Okay.
I just think our relentlessness should be directed in a certain way.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually the path, you know, to kind of be absolutely relentless in the way that you collaborate, in the way that you think and behave, in that artistic practice.
In the way that you love.
Yeah.
In the way that you trust.
Yep. In the way that you feel for other people. And I think those things are where the, you know, that kind of drive should actually be, be put into, rather than creating a product that's going to sell worldwide. You know?
Yeah, because you would hope that that's the thing that, you would hope that one thing leads to another. You make something that's good enough to sell worldwide, so it is affecting the most amount of people, but possibly you only need to affect one.
Yeah.
One right person who ends up becoming, yeah, imagine just giving Hitler a hug at one point, just before he ended up doing that.
Yeah.
And then when he was given that opportunity, he was like, nah, I'm going to go hang out with my mate. Something like that.
Yeah,
like,
you just don't know you don't know what kind of flip, you know, how things will flip. I mean, when I was in the prison last week, I had a conversation with one of the prisoners, and he told me about a flip.
Oh, wow.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
He had a flip, and the flip took him, to turn him away from one direction into another direction.
Wow.
And I think those things happen all the time.
In an instant.
Yep.
And then it's somehow about having the support structures and the habits that are going to continue. Have you had a moment, though, because I think it will be revealing and we can talk about what you learned from it, where knowing all of these things hasn't helped at all, and you've ended up acting or responding or engaging in a way that was not any of those things, just because you were caught off guard or you were...
Yeah.
Because in some ways I feel like a lot of my effort is just towards being a the better self, or the better citizen, or the better person. Mm-hmm. I can imagine mm-hmm. a lover or a friend, or but of course that's not always manifested.
Yeah. Failed.
Yeah.
Every day, every single day, to, you know, make good work, be a good father, you know, be a good friend, always.
Even those moments I think about, like, being more empathetic, and then if I'm in a rush and somebody needs a hand and it's going to make me 10 minutes late, I'm like, sorry.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the day, I'm like, you idiot.
Yeah.
You know these things. You know 10 minutes that you give to that person is going to have much more of a positive benefit than the cost of your ego for being 10 minutes late.
Yeah.
But just in the moment doesn't
yeah.
come through. So I'm wondering about a moment like that for you.
On a big scale?
Actual moment, maybe.
On a big scale. Mm. Oh, look, there's been... I mean, over the last few years, I've certainly redeployed my artistic practice in a completely different way than the way I was doing it before.
Okay.
Part of it's shifting out of, adding to my artistic practice and building into a curatorial practice, and part of it's actually moving away from any dependency on any government funding.
Okay.
And that enables a certain kind of freedom which I hadn't had before, and which is can be quite unnerving. Art is a public good, should be funded by government, absolutely, but I think there are issues around government funding for the arts in Australia are incredibly problematic, and by separating myself from that space, it's enabled me to my kind of practice is just sort of, I just feel like I'm in a whole completely different plane in the way that I put ideas together and mm-hmm. put things into practice, and I'm at the beginning of that journey, and mm-hmm. I can really feel like the momentum is really there, mm-hmm. and I feel like my working life is quite unbelievable.
Was that a flip?
Or
was it a realization that in a way curation has far more leverage than creation, because you get to leverage all the other things and people and efforts around you?
I'd love to say that that's what it was, but actually it was a set of circumstances mm-hmm. that were partly out of my control.
Yeah, okay.
That kind of, you know, I think I've been really, really good at reinventing
mm-hmm.
what I do in relation to what is going on. Not reinventing, actually. I have absolutely no loyalty to any art form boundaries, and I don't see them.
Mm.
I know other people do, but I just don't see them, and I never have. And I look at it and I think that, you know, the world, you know, looks like a box to some people, and they do theatre.
Mm.
But it's never looked like a box to me. Theatre's always been a way of getting somewhere else. It's always been a sort of a way of, in the same as dance has, in the same as visual arts has. I don't really understand the way that those sort of things get configured, because it doesn't reflect how I see the world or how the world appears to me.
Mm.
And I think by, you know, playing out, an artistic practice in which ideas come first and the things follow after that, has actually enabled me to take more risks than I would have if somebody with my personality was actually kept themselves in that kind of frame, in that box. And I think what's happened in terms of the flip, it was more I had to pass through a process in order to shed a version of myself as an artist that I was, in order to find out whether or not I was going to continue to be an artist, mm-hmm. and if so, what that was going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Where did that first version of artist come from?
Football.
Okay.
Yeah. really. I think it came from footy. Footy's, I played football, and it was basically that sense of spectacle and movement and interaction with the crowd and being on a team. Those sort of things are absolutely fundamental to my first kind of impulse for being an actor. And then working as a director with a group of artists. And then I sort of passed through that phase. But I think it became really out of that kind of way in which sport and art really share so many things when you are into the world of the ensemble as you are in theatre and dance.
Yeah, I think that maybe the thing that it doesn't... I think games and arts share a lot more maybe than sport and art in the fact that sport can be a game, but it also needs somebody to win. But dance games don't always need somebody to win. Yeah. I've been thinking about it a bit. I wonder about if there's been a rise in curation and if curators are the managerial burgeoning of the artist, and in the way that we have more... managerial roles in all other industries.
Yeah. There's an opinion.
Yeah, that's an opinion right there. But that's also where you go as we've had a, like, the artist or the creator is the worker and the curator is managing the workers.
I think that's the worst kind of curation.
Okay.
I really do. I absolutely think. What I'm most interested in is curating the conditions for artistic production rather than programming and exhibiting. I think one should come from the other. And so as a curator, my curatorial practice is absolutely based around trying to convince other people that the only way for cultural development that hasn't really ever been tried before is to put the artist at the centre of everything. Pay them more money. Give them the freedom to, you know, come up to Bundanon and just go, okay, so there you go. This is here. See what you feel is possible in this. Trust them. And I think that the whole idea of programming and exhibiting is probably much more serving the ego of the curator than it actually sometimes does the work of the artist. And I'd really like to push against that. I'm much more interested in trying to create the conditions for artists to work at their optimal and than I am in creating a program that's going to give me a great job. Because I think you're absolutely right in that space. And I think that many people don't address that, in terms of the relationship between the curator and the managerialism. I think they don't address that. And if they did, then I think they'd probably behave differently.
Yeah. I wonder if the rise of the provisioning of places are going to undermine the idea that you even need to do an ego-serving job as a curator to keep your job, because just do a good job and there won't be another job after it.
I think people are starting to really worry that that's the case.
Yeah, right.
And I just think the way that the sort of the modelling around funding or giving money to make things is going, that that's something that, you know, we have to really renegotiate. And that it's, you know, there's a real push for things like creative industries, and creative industries is actually the left's concession to neoliberalism. Because essentially it reduces artistic production to a financial end. So you see that kind of dynamic play out all the time, and that's just a reductive model. And I think there is a new push for that to happen here. In Victoria, we don't have an arts ministry anymore. We have a ministry for creative industries. There's no ministry for the arts. And I think there's that sort of conflation of communication and the arts in the present federal government portfolio could possibly open the way for that to happen, which would be, which is something that we should absolutely resist, because it will delay what you're talking about, and we need that point that you're talking about where I'll just better do a good job because there won't be anything. We need We need that to come quickly. It will just be, you know, smoke and mirrors if creative industries. It'll be like people pretending that they've got a job when they don't have a job.
I already feel like it. Well, you invent jobs for yourself.
Yeah.
And the thing that I, the reason that I am not at all uncomfortable being an independent practitioner across many different forms is because I've always seen my dad running his own business or my mom running her own business. And their entire life, though it is sometimes profitable and sometimes not, exists in a way that you know that you need to work so that you can contribute and so that you can survive. And the best way to do that is to notice what usefulness you can provide to those around you.
Yeah.
And so you just invent shit.
Yeah, and that's what artists do a lot of the time. They, you know, they make stuff up and they pretend and they play and they create things that haven't been created before, or they, you know, refashion things that already exist, or they arrange things in ways that nobody's ever arranged them before. You know, the kind of multiplicity of activities for an artist is just absolutely phenomenal.
It's pretty beautifully endless, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder if we say settle on the concept of that if you're going through hell, just keep going. That if we have come from more funding and support and understanding of it being an intrinsic public good to have people who are supported not because there is consumer demand, but because it will increase social
well-being.
Yeah, that if we're leaving that point and we're walking through hell, admittedly in a very beautiful, open, lucky country, open in wide spaces, not in border control. That when we get to the other side, it's not because we've turned around and walked back. It's because we have emerged into something that we can't yet consider or comprehend or anticipate. And I would like to think that that's because we're going upstream, not because we... I would just like it to be systematically considered and anticipated that, okay, what are we going to do when we get out the other side?
Yeah.
How do we do that?
You have to be incredibly persistent. You have to trust.
Relentless,
and you have to know why you're going to where you're going, even if you don't know
what's there. Okay.
So that's something that only each of us can do on a daily basis. We have to confirm those things for ourselves. Am I strong enough? Am I persistent enough? What do I believe in? They are the things that you have to just do every day.
And as a community, because I have been in situations where the people that have the money to dish out, they're going to dish it out to the best idea that's presented. They don't have an idea themselves. So as a community, we need to have some idea of how we want it to be.
Yes.
On the other side. But I wonder if we're stuck in what it has been and what has like stallingly worked sometimes for some of us to be able to consider afresh what it could be. And the reason I thought about that is when you're saying flipping away from relying on any kind of government funding meant that you got to reframe your thought process that got to exist outside of the doctrine of that consideration. So
well, I think that works for me as an artist, but I don't think that works for society in general.
No,
that flip, you know, is kind of a marker in my evolution as an artist. But I think that funding for public funds for arts is not just about the money going to the artists. It's about the way in which a society values all the things that arts can provide to society.
Yeah.
And I think that the arts at its most basic level sticks everything together. In a society that I think is becoming more secular, the arts actually gives us meaning. And without meaning, we stop being civilized.
So I wonder if we say, okay, on the other side, there will be government funding.
Mm-hmm.
There will be arts, and arts will be serving social cohesion and mm-hmm. reconsideration and self-understanding and comprehension. And what else? Is that it? Maybe is that the plan for what we will emerge into?
Things that are beautiful and are gobsmackingly provocative and irritate the shit out of us and, you know, provoke unpleasantness and, you know, all those sort of different things.
Mm.
If at the end of it just serves the instrumentalization process, then it's
a failure.
That's because actually that's where we need to pass through.
Yeah.
At the end of it, you really want you want people to be looking at all different kinds of things made by all different kinds of people that are there because art isn't of itself an agent of progress.
Mm-hmm. And in the past, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like that art is in and of itself an agent of progress, especially in the minds that it activates and the reconsideration of social construct that it brings to the fore. I mean, for the French especially.
Yeah.
But the people that then go and see the art are the I don't know the real word, like the gentlemen and the gentle ladies who are not the workers. They're the ones that go and see the art. And I wonder if the only way we get to the point where we have this complete engrossing of art in society is that robots in the form of algorithms rather than in the form of humanoids relieve most of our activity, and we just have a few actions that we need to take every day, but almost the extinction of the working class because it has been shifted onto. And then I really fear for all of the arts that is not about going to a flash venue in a high district and is not about people who are bored and need to go and be entertained, but is about people who are throbbing with life and interaction and need an escape or a transcendence or something.
I think there is a growing global middle class, but yes, there's also a growing global working class, because we don't even deal with Africa.
No,
you know, we're still trying to deal with the Asia and the Middle East. Mm. All those, you know, the developing. There's such a long trajectory, way to go.
Yeah.
And I think we can talk about Australia in to a degree in the context that it still exists as a single entity, but for the most part that will blur, and that's one of the reasons why Abbott doesn't work, because deep down people understand that it's blurring and they have to do something about it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what it's all going to look like.
Well, hopefully it's unbelievably beautiful. So that you smile every day when you wake up. Of course, it will look similar to the way it looks at the moment. I think the other thing is, how's it going to make you feel?
Yeah, okay.
You know, I think that's the
that is
thing.
A clincher. Yes. Well, I also wonder about, I proposed a residency the other day, which was to make GIFs as dance performance and premieres. And the big task there is, if you can move somebody as deeply in a 3-second looping soundless GIF as you can in a multi-hour long live performance work.
Of course you can.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, it can. I mean, you see it with kids.
Yeah,
but short attention spans, you know. Somebody just does, you know, some serious combination of movements, and it's like, wow, that is amazing. And then you look at it, and you look at it, and you go, I never saw that. And then you look at it through the kids' eyes, and you go, actually, that is quite amazing.
Yeah, right.
You know, I think those things are really possible.
It's like mostly what we're doing, almost all the time in every art form, and the forms that are not considered art forms, the educations and the wanderings, is pulling someone alongside us and being like, see that? And they're like, oh yeah, I didn't see that before. And you're like, cool, all right, I'll see you later.
Yeah,
that's right. Almost all we're doing, isn't it?
That's almost all we're doing, yeah. And that's really, really, really important, because so much of it is actually saying, you see that? You see that? You see that? And people are being asked to see the same thing over and over and over again.
Mm. In space, you need at least 3 points to determine your trajectory, or size, or motion. And of course, if you only have 1 point, you can't work out anything about your own size, like your own mass, your own energy, your own trajectory, your own direction. So of course, we need multiple points.
But of course.
Because each point will reflect back to us where we are, where we want to go, and how we be here together. Might be a wrap. Might be a nice epiphany to finish on.
Excellent. Good, that was fun.
That was fun. Thanks, David.
Pleasure.